Hi, Paul.
Hey, Sarah, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
All
I'm
right.
Sarah Posner, and this is The Posner Show. And with me today is Paul Rauschenbusch. He is the editor at Huffington Post Religion and an all-around very knowledgeable guy about the history of American religion and the American religious scene.
Thank
and,
you.
And we're going to talk about Tim Tebow. And, you know, I think when Tim Tebow first hit the scene, you know, the football scene and the religion scene, I was a little Tim Tebowed out and didn't want to talk about Tim Tebow anymore.
Yeah, like after the first, like, 15 seconds of it.
Exactly.
I didn't even give him 15 minutes.
Right. But I think that this thing that has come up with him declining to speak at Robert Jefferson's church, the First Baptist Church of Dallas, is sort of interesting. And you wrote a kind of interesting, provocative piece at the Huffington Post about this. So let's first start by just giving a little background for people who aren't fully up to speed on this. Tebow had agreed to speak at some grand reopening or of some, was, is that what it was? It was a grand reopening?
Well, you know, I had gotten this very slick presentation about the biggest church campus, construction in the last, you know, decades. It was this huge effort by First Baptist Dallas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think he was part of this kind of big reveal of this incredible kind of Christian cathedral-ish looking structure that they've put a lot of money into and really believe in what they're doing.
Right. So he was scheduled to speak there, and then there was some press coverage of what this church was, who the pastor was, and his history of saying some very controversial and offensive things. If people remember the 2012 presidential primary, they'll remember Jeffress as the pastor who very infamously said at the Values Voters Summit that Mormonism was a cult, and Jeffress had endorsed Rick Perry at the Values Voters Summit, and then talked to a gaggle of reporters, myself included, where he elaborated on his Mormonism as a cult statements. And he's just said all kinds of things about gay people and Muslims and Catholics, right?
Yeah, something about satanic and Catholics, you know.
Right, the old canard. So I think there was some attention on Tebow.
I want to interject there that,
yeah.
You know, that it's important also to realize, like, you know, the idea that, you know, things about gay people that, you know, gays should not have the right to marry and that, you know, Jesus is the only way. These are very kind of mainline thoughts. I mean, what Jeffress does do, mainline in the evangelical world, I should clarify. But
mainstream.
But he just, like, you know, he said Islam is a heresy from the pit of hell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, you can be an evangelical and believe that Jesus is the only way, but you don't have to say exactly that. And I think that that's really, like, part of why I don't know if he seeks attention, but he sure gets it.
I get the sense that he seeks attention.
Okay.
I think he seeks the attention. I mean, I think he very much was willing at the Values Voters Summit. This was in 2011 during the primary.
Yeah.
He seemed very interested in getting the attention of reporters, and he didn't seem at all interested in pushing them away. There was a big group of reporters who gathered around him, and he basically held court.
Yeah.
So I do think that he is the kind of person, I think, who wants to make this sort of statement and say, look, you know, I am doctrinally correct, and
yeah,
I am not ashamed of it, and you liberals might make fun of me, but I'm the one who's right.
Right.
Okay, so a lot of this got all of these statements that he made had pretty much been in the public eye around the time that he made the statements about Mormonism, just because that sort of thing causes bloggers and reporters to start digging, and then they come up, they find all the old sermons and post them online, and then everybody knows. But all of this got turned up again when it was announced that Tebow would be speaking at this thing.
Yeah.
And then Tebow backed out.
Well, you know, I'm not exactly sure, you know, there was, if it had any weight, but there was a change.org petition,
okay.
Tim Tebow, please don't speak. Just, you know, I don't think Tim is, like, on change.org saying, well, what are they saying about me today? But I do think that it was like,
but it was
a peg for news stories that allowed it to become a little bit of a story, like, hey, there are people out there who are really saying, do you really want to be associated with this?
Right. Now, first of all, let me say that according to a statement that was issued by the church, it appeared that Tebow was doing this because he wanted to avoid controversy, not necessarily because he disagreed with Jeffress. So the statement said that Tebow called the pastor, saying that for personal and professional reasons, he needed to avoid controversy at this time, but would like to come to First Baptist Dallas to speak at a future date. So maybe that was their interpretation of the phone call. It's hard to know what exactly was said since we weren't there. But you write in your piece, that this decision by Tebow to not go to First Baptist essentially sidelines the religious right. You use that term, sidelines the religious right.
Yeah, so, well, that we were very proud of that kind of pun, that sort of athletic.
He made a football pun. Oh, okay, yeah.
Sarah, come on. Thank you. A little credit here. Actually, it wasn't even mine. It was like a friend across the way who came up with it. So I can't claim it, but, you know, we own it.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, but how can one small, in the relative scheme of things, event like this actually serve to sideline Elizabeth Wright?
Well, you know, of course it doesn't completely sideline them. I just think that, you know, I think that it's become so toxic, especially this kind of really, you know, this really strong rhetoric. You know, put aside the gay, we can come back to the gay stuff, but, you know, just this, like, Catholics are satanic, Islam is from the pit of hell, Jews, you know, aren't saved because they don't believe in Jesus. You know, it's just, and I think that, I honestly think that that kind of rhetoric, no one really wants to be associated with it. And this is, I think that Tebow made the right decision. I think he's saying, oh, well, I'll come back some other time. I think that that is ridiculous. And, you know, there has been a lot of backlash against him from the religious right. Mm-hmm. But I just, I think that for the mainstream and mainstream evangelical, that they don't want to be associated with that. They, you know, they're sick of it. And there are, you know, the younger evangelicals, really, I think that they're not that interested in being associated necessarily. Now, they're not, I'm not saying younger evangelicals are all liberal, but I don't think they want to be associated with that kind of rhetoric. And I think Tebow is actually picking the right team here. Although his
main... Oh, no, no more football puns.
Yes, yes, he's going to be drafted. No, the, you know, I will say that I think that in the short run, he's actually going to have problems because there's a lot of people very angry at him who really thought, like, oh, he's, you know, going to go to bat for us and he's our Jesus guy in this secular world. But I think ultimately, like, people are sick of that. And the more they learn about Jeffers, the less likely they're going to be interested in being associated with it. And, you know, generationally, there is a gap. I mean, younger evangelicals, especially on the gay thing, just, you know, are not where these older people are. And so I think my sense is if Tebow, if your positions are too extreme for the evangelical golden boy, then you know, you're sidelined. You're not as important. And the last election in some ways also proved that.
Well, yeah, he did pick the least good candidate of the Republican field, didn't he? But he is a Texan, so I suppose there's some loyalty there. But, you know, I mean, I don't know what the demographic makeup of Jeffers Church is, but obviously it has plenty of money to build this new Crystal Cathedral type place that you were talking about. So, you know, and I don't know to what extent he has younger folks in his congregation, but it doesn't seem like Jeffers has suffered at all in terms of support from people in his community who agree with him. And... you know, and I wonder if, you know, obviously somebody like Tim Tebow, who's got all the celebrity, probably gets a lot of invitations for speaking engagements and probably doesn't vet every single person who asks him to come speak. He hears Baptist Church, he probably figures it's okay, right? But he didn't balk at it at all until there was pressure brought to bear on him. And, you know, you've got to wonder how much of this was driven by, I don't like this guy's tone, or this guy's tone is bad for my image.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that there was some of that, and that's been kind of the pushback against my article, is that this guy is only interested in money and only interested mm-hmm. in image. I think probably there's some of that, but I don't think that contradicts my point, is that what is the image that you want to put forward? Is it an image that taught, you know, he's just like, I just want to talk about the unconditional love of Jesus. And, you know, my point on the thing is that in the piece I wrote on Huffington was that you know, these kind of locations in the religious landscape are no longer places where you can really just talk about Jesus. They're so politicized, and they're so politicized in a way that is a turnoff to so many people that, you know, the Tebow's kind of like, well, why would I'm not going to go there, and I'm not going to become, like, you know, I think maybe he's maturing, but, you know, he's being used by a lot of these people to say, hey, look, let me get my picture next to Tebow. And, you know, I just think he's just saying this is not the photo opportunity I want. And mm-hmm. and it'll be interesting. I mean, you know, I don't think Tebow is a leader. You know, I think, you know, if we compare it to some of the movement that's happened specifically on gay rights within the Black church because of Obama's public change, you know, that has really changed a lot of the numbers in the Black church about the way they approach gay marriage. I don't think Tebow's necessarily considers himself a leader, and he hasn't come out, you know, saying, hey, I support gay marriage or anything like that. But
that would be, I think, problematic for him to do that.
Oh, it would be devastating for him to do that. You know, right. but he hasn't, he also says, he has not said, which would be quite easy for him to do, that I do not support gay marriage. Just to clarify, I don't support gay marriage. He just doesn't want to be that controversial guy. He wants to be that, like, kind of Christian guy who loves Jesus and isn't part of the political scene.
Right. But can you
I don't know. I just feel like the point of my article really was just to say, wow, if Tim Tebow is saying you're too extreme and he's saying that to really a GOP kingmaker. I mean, you talk about that conference you went to and the fact that he was just loving having, you know, all the reporters hold, you know, court for all of you. You know, I think that, you know, Jeffers is a kingmaker. People listen to what he says. And Tebow's like, ugh, I don't want to be associated with that. It's bad for my image. I mean, when that becomes bad for your image to be associated with the religious right, that may say something about the religious right.
Well, I mean, I think that I think of Tebow as being part of the religious right in a different kind of packaging. You know, 30 years ago, I don't think we really had, or maybe I don't follow football closely enough to know, but I don't recall somebody with that kind of celebrity so openly taking their theology to the platform that they otherwise had, you know, whether it was a platform as a performer or an athlete or a musician or something like that. And I think it's a, I think the reason why the religious right likes TiVo so much is he offers them an image makeover, just not himself. You know, it's not, the image makeover is not just for TiVo. It's for the religious right who you say is like uncomfortable with some of the statements that Jeffress would make, but he didn't, TiVo didn't specify what was problematic about what Jeffress has said in the past.
Right, so we're left to assume.
The gay thing or the Muslim thing, yeah. The Catholic thing, or the things he said about Jews. You know, I think that TiVo's probably in his life heard plenty of talk like that.
Oh, yeah.
He grew up evangelical. He's probably heard that sort of thing all the time. So we don't know what it was that led him to decide not to. You know, he said something in the tweet that the new information that has come to, you know, to my attention. I don't know. We don't know what that is.
I can't remember. He also he canceled an appointment, an appearance with Rod Paisley as well. You know, so he has canceled before when he doesn't like the, you know, what he's hearing about someone.
Oh, Parsley?
Yeah, Parsley. Sorry, Paisley. Mm-hmm. That's the design. So you know, I mean, it's not the first time that he's backed out because he doesn't want to be associated with the kind of more radical contingent. The tweet, I just, you know, this drove me a little crazy, but you know, Rick Warren's tweet, which you tweeted at me, you know, like, oh, he's bullied, you know, and all these people are being bullied. And it's like, no, I mean, come on, look at the guy who he decided not to be associating with. This guy says the most outrageous things that you yourself, Rick, say you don't hold. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
well, you know, I think that Warren's new hobby horse is the religious freedom issue, right?
Yeah.
He spoke recently in Washington about that at the Berkeley Center. I can't remember the full title of the Berkeley Center, but it's a program at Georgetown University where they study religious freedom issues. And he spoke about religious freedom there. And so I think that he is looking to, it seems to me that he's looking to defend the free expression rights of people like Jeffress or someone like Louis Giglio, who I think a lot of conservatives said was bullied out of speaking at the inauguration, giving the benediction at the inauguration.
No, again, I think that these are all good examples. I think that I don't think any of us would say you don't have the right to say that. But I think that, you know, what this demonstrates is that there are repercussions, you know, for saying things like that, and that you're going to lose Tim Tebow coming to your church because, you know, he doesn't want to be associated with that. And you're going to lose younger members who eventually are going to say, ugh, I just cannot listen to this anti-gay stuff anymore because I have too many gay friends myself. And I just think that the writing's on the wall. And this was one more thing just saying, oh, you know, that to me, when, you know, that this just further kind of exiled them to sort of a kind of political Siberia, which they're going to set up their own shop there and live there and probably thrive there for another, you know, 4 decades. But I think that the writing is on the wall for this kind of rhetoric. It's just not going to, it's going to be completely legal and supported by, you know, First Amendment, but it's not going to do you any favors.
Well, I don't know, because I think that one of the things that, you know, after the Louis Giglio thing, I had David Gushy on the show and we talked about, he brought up actually how someone like Giglio, whose sermon on the gay issues was 15 years old, and he isn't known anymore for engaging in this anti-gay rhetoric. He's known more for his Passion Conference and for speaking out against human trafficking and so on.
Right.
Yet when this happened, when this came to light that he had given this anti-gay sermon, his reaction was not, oh, you know, that was 15 years ago. I don't believe any of that stuff anymore. His reaction was, fine, I'm going to back out of the doing the benediction because of other people's agenda who wanted to change what the event was about or however he phrased it. And what Gushy was saying was that, you know, someone like Giglio cannot disavow those formerly anti-gay remarks, even if he wanted to disavow them, which we don't know whether Giglio did or not. But he can't, because then he would no longer be essentially a member of the evangelical club.
Well, right. I mean, that's Tony Campolo. That's, you know, more or less Jim Wallace, but maybe for some other reasons. You know, I think Shane Claiborne is the one who's, you know, kind of now still suspect. I mean, it's become the litmus test, and that's the reason for sure TiVo was never going to say anything. And I honestly, you know, I think TiVo is not, you know, pro-gay marriage or pro-gay people at all. You know, I just think that what I thought was kind of momentous about this is – what happened was that a line has been drawn where for some evangelicals the rhetoric is just so unattractive. It's kind of like the GOP as a whole. It's just an unattractive finger pointing organization that doesn't feel good to be a part of, and it doesn't do anybody any favors. And so that's my point in this, is that I think it's astounding that he's decided not to go, and I think it'll be very interesting to see how he vets people in the future, because I don't know, like, what's coming up for him. And I think it'll be really interesting to see, you know, the continuing self-reflection that has to happen in some of these other churches. I mean, you know, Rick Warren cannot keep on pointing the finger at other outward. I mean, you have to point it at the evangelical right and say, like, you know, what are we doing? You know, why are we, you know, why are we becoming this kind of fringe voice? And I think the gay marriage thing is such a loser for them. And, you know, I don't think it's going to do them any favors as far as growth in the future.
Well, I agree with you on the gay marriage thing. However, I mean, I don't think that it's going to help them win over new converts or win. It's not a winning message. The demographics are against them on the gay marriage thing. But at the same time, I find the whole, I mean, I almost appreciate in a way, and this is going to sound weird, but when they're so honest about what they really think about gay people, at least we know what they're thinking, right?
Right. Right.
When you pretend like you're above the culture war and you're not going to talk about that stuff anymore, but you're still in your heart of hearts thinking that about gay people, but knowing that it's not okay anymore to say it out loud and to pretend that you've somehow transformed yourself into somebody who cares about other issues, I think it deceptively hides it under the radar. So it's either, you know.
Yeah, like, I mean, sorry, I have to say, I'll take it. I mean, if you're willing to, like, you know, swallow it and say, oh, God, you know, I don't really believe that, but I'm not going to make that be my issue, and I'm not going to really campaign on that, and I'm not going to demonize gay people, I'll take it. And then I'll leave it for the next generation to really not have it in their heart. You know, I have to say, like, if we look at other struggles, you know, people are struggling with sexism, people are struggling with racism, and you know, in some ways, the political correctness rhetoric is helpful because, yeah, you shouldn't say sexist things. No, you shouldn't say racist things. Even if you have some of that in your heart, you have to just, like, kind of go, oh, wait, I shouldn't say that. I'm great, you know? I mean, don't say homophobic things. Don't say, like, you know, that gay people are disordered or, you know, perverse or, I mean, just, you know, fine. Like, you know, keep it to yourself. I think Jeffries is, you know, is successful right now, and I think they're building this really big thing, and there will be, you know, like in any religious tradition, there will be people on the fringe, and especially there's a lot of evangelicals who have money who are willing to put it into the church. They view it as the primary place where they want to get change done. I don't think you can say the same thing. You used to be able to say that in the mainline churches. You can't say that anymore. Or at least not in the white churches. So you know, for now, you know, I just think that, you know, kind of back to the original question is, like, isn't it something when the symbol of evangelical Christianity in the sports world is huge? I mean, he was huge. Decides not to come to your church, and then, like, says something like, "Well, we'll come later." No, you'll never go back. I mean, because it'll be a huge story if you go back. So, like, I mean, I just think it's a big story. I think it says something, and it says something about a rejection of extremism. And I can't say that it's coming out of this beautiful place where he just doesn't want to be associated with Christians that are judging other people, or if it's coming out of, like, that just isn't good for my ultimate image. But for now, I'll take it.
Well, I feel like, you know, by not talking about, I think there's been a repackaging of the quote unquote younger evangelicals or the millennials or what have you. And someone like Giglio is an example of this, right? But I think that by not talking about it at all, right? Okay, so fine, it's great that they're not using the incendiary homophobic language anymore. But by refusing to discuss it, we're not really understanding, has there really been any kind of shift in attitude towards LGBT people? Or is it just a shift in what we want to talk about because we want to have a certain image that's not of the culture war?
Well, and I think it's a really interesting question. And in some ways, you know, to kind of, you know, elevate it, I think that there's still a lot of difficulty with the theological issues that confront questions around sexuality and that confront questions about exclusivity of truth claims. And so I think even in the mainline church, it's still, you know, when you get down to it, well, what does it mean that Jesus is the only way? It's right there. You know what I mean? There's a lot of work that needs to be done to kind of help people understand that, you know, interfaith dialogue, you know, can be a positive thing, and that we can learn about one another, and that we can disagree and yet respect one another, and that sexuality is, you know, a gift from God, and that, you know, what's remarkable about the Bible is how little there is about homosexuality, and kind of re-understanding some of the stories. So the light in the room I'm in just went out. So there you are. So now I look like I'm in a nightclub a little bit. But anyway, I think that there's a lot of work to be done, and I think a lot of evangelical churches they must struggle with this. I don't, you know, I'm not part of the evangelical community, so I can't say, but I do know that, you know, this world, they do feel like this world that they understood was their Christian world is becoming much more complicated. And I'm not sure that they always have the theological tools to deal with it.
Well, I want to read to you, this is from a piece that was published in the Baptist Press.
I'm sorry, say it again?
This is from a piece that was published in the Baptist Press. Uh-huh. So they quote from Denny Burke, who has been a guest with me here. He's a professor at Boyce College, which is the undergraduate arm of Southern Theological Seminary. And he wrote, I'm a big Tebow fan for reasons that have to do with more than just football. And I think he's more than earned the benefit of the doubt. He left his reasons ambiguous and absent further clarification. I don't think this move should be interpreted as an expression of support for gay rights or some liberalized distortion of Christianity. In fact, I'm confident that he is an Orthodox believer in Jesus Christ. I have a hunch he's probably just trying not to get entangled in the culture war. At the end of the day, I don't know why he canceled. Perhaps he will elaborate at some point. Then he said that, others, including the Huffington Post, who were criticizing basic Christian doctrine that Jesus is the only way of salvation, the certainty of eternal judgment for those who die outside of Christ, the definition of marriage as the union of one man and one woman. And he said these teachings that the liberals were criticizing are not the innovation of a single pastor, but are the established consensus of the Christian church over its entire 2,000-year history. If this church's views on these matters cannot be tolerated, then we are in a scary place. In short, to marginalize this church for holding such views is to marginalize Christianity itself. It means that the tolerance police have finally achieved their ironic end, the intolerance of Christianity in American culture. Now, I think that this fits in with the Rick Warren tweet, although it was elaborated upon in longer than 140 characters, and I think that this is the corner that the religious right finds itself in at the moment, because, you know, like you say, they're looking at the demographics or the public opinion on something like gay marriage. And Denny Burke told me he knows they're going to lose that battle. But he said that they consider it their duty to continue to defend what they consider to be Orthodox Christianity and defend it against what they consider to be infringements on their freedom to express that Orthodox Christianity.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that Huffington Post is kind of a flagship organization, to quote it. But
wait, I just wanted to get the quote again.
What's that?
The liberalized distortion of Christianity.
Ah, well, you know, it's a Christianity that, you know, whose traditions, you know, go back a long ways to, you know, some might say to the Enlightenment, which looks at faith as a dynamic thing, and that, you know, we can continue to grow and learn, and that, you know, Orthodoxy has to be breathed new life into it every generation. So, you know, I think that that's like, you know, white knuckling things that don't need to be white knuckled. And that, you know, again, you can, you know, so I'm not surprised that that's the reaction. I think that they're trying to figure out, okay, this is okay. It's okay. This doesn't mean that, you know, that our world is crumbling. But, you know, when it comes down to it, theology does change. People's perspective does change. You know, we are not the same Christianity that we were 100 years ago. We're not the same Christianity that we were 500 years ago. The idea that we are is ahistorical. And so we have to realize that change does not necessarily mean a betrayal of tradition. It's the continuous growth of tradition. And you know, there's always been some who have just white-knuckled it. And I think that this is an example of that. Things are changing so fast. That's the thing, especially around issues of you know, gay rights. I think things are changing, you know, so fast. And some of it is happening within the church. Most of it is happening outside of the church. But, you know, we have many mainline denominations which have full, you know, rights for gay clergy. You know, I mean, there's at least in the United States. And so there's a lot of places where you can be gay and be in the church. And those are not kind of two different. That's not presented as a choice. So, you know, and he has every right to say that. Great. And, you know, I'm not Buddhist. So, like, you know, if I was, you know, if I believed everything Buddhist said, I would be a Buddhist, but I'm not. I'm not a Muslim. I'm a Christian. And so disagreement is inherent within the religious landscape. But the question is, you know, in what ways does that affect our politic together, the way we live together? And, you know, I'm afraid, you know, the gay marriage issue is, you know, people are beginning to think, oh, you know what? The problem with marriage today in America is not gay marriage. It's so funny. I was thinking about this today. It's like people, you know, there's so much divorce. And yet then you have this one segment of the population that really wants to get in on the marriage game. They really want to get in on the, oh, yeah, I want to commit to one person for the rest of my life. And that's gay people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's being met with such resistance. It's absolutely crazy. But, you know, again, you know, this is not, you know, the kind of centerpiece of what we're talking about, which is, you know, where ultimately will the kind of religious right, the Christian right, live in America? And my sense is it's going to be further and further on the margins.
I still think, though, that, you know, I guess it depends on what your definition of the margins is, because I do think that they are cognizant of the need for a makeover. And I think something that Denny said in that bit that was quoted from his blog, that, you know, I'm confident that Debo's an Orthodox believer in Jesus Christ. In other words, I'm confident that, you know, maybe apart from the incendiary language, he pretty much agrees with Jeffress, but I have a hunch he's probably just trying not to get entangled in the culture war, right? So they're
going
to try.
Great.
Yeah,
move out. Move out.
If,
declare defeat and move out.
But
you know what I mean?
It depends on what you mean by the culture war, right? So it's like you could have another way of saying the things that Jeffress said that aren't so over the top, right? So you could say, instead of saying Mormonism is a cult, not you, but, you know, someone could say, you know, I have serious doctrinal problems with Mormonism.
And honestly, that I have to say, Sarah, if someone were to say I have serious doctrinal,
and I don't think that Mitt Romney should be president of the United States because of that,
then, you know, that I think is, you know, is legitimate. I mean, people said the exact same thing about a Catholic, and I don't agree that should be a deal breaker. But if you take it out of the political realm and say, you know, I have serious doctrinal differences with Mormonism, and I think it's worth a discussion. Should we call it a Christian faith or is it something else? That's, I think, a legitimate conversation to have
about a presidential candidate.
No, I mean, that's why I'm saying I'm different. But I'm just saying, like, there are everything. And Jeffries could say, I think that, you know, really that it's so important to have a man and a woman in a relationship. I think that's what marriage is. I think that, honestly, I would appreciate so much if all evangelicals would at least style-wise change it, even if their substance is not completely changed. I would be happy just to say, because I have doctrinal differences with Mormons and Muslims and Buddhists because I have a different doctrine. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like just like a truism. But can you say it politely? Can you say it with respect? You
know, but does that mean that they're sidelined though? Like, if they were
what it does mean is this kind of radical right rhetoric. I think it sidelines someone. I think it makes them toxic. I do not think that a successful GOP candidate will seek out the Hagees and the Jeffries next time. I just don't think.
Well, maybe not the Jeffress because Tebow made him toxic, but there'll be somebody. You know, this inevitably happens every election cycle, right? There's the desire to get the attention of a megachurch pastor because he's got this huge audience. And then inevitably something comes up where, you know, they said something.
I mean, I think that the reason that Rick Warren had so much success in 2008 was his main, you know, he was kind of known as the feel-good evangelical.
He was known as that, but he basically said that people who supported abortion rights were like Holocaust deniers.
Right. And then he went on to, like, you know, make a public statement in on Prop 8. And, you know, when he came into HuffPost, HuffPost Live, he said that was a huge mistake. I shouldn't have done it. You want them to change their hearts and be repentant
and that's why I want to hear them say exactly what they think. I want to know exactly what they think.
I'm happy to know what they think. But I do not, I think that they have learned, and I think it's fine to have learned it, that, the demonizing or using language that demonizes, and Rick Warren, like, you know, it's a little, he really bends over backwards not to demonize gays. And I really think that in his heart of hearts, with Rick Warren, I'm actually pretty convinced he no longer can really believe it, you know, but he's in that trap too. Like, he can't believe the gay people. He is, you know, he's too much in the mix. But again, it's almost like this, you can't say that in the evangelical community, but anyway, I think it's to be seen. I just thought, you know, I mean, and again, you know, I had a slightly over the top headline in order to catch attention, but I really do.
Oh,
feel
nobody ever does that.
No. That's it. So I'm the first in journalism to do that. But I do think that it meant something, and it meant something because of the profile of the two men involved, and it meant something because of the kind of way it went down, which was essentially, you know, people saying you should not be associated with this guy, to Tebow, and Tebow basically saying, yeah, you're right. I think that says something. I think it says something about maybe the way, the wider world is looking at this kind of, you know, hateful rhetoric that we're getting out of the religious right. And hopefully it means that we're going to just reject it out of hand soon.
I'm
maybe glass half full. I don't know.
Yeah. So let's take a prediction. How long until someone, not maybe Rick Warren himself, but somebody like Rick Warren will be able to just say, look, I'm fine with gay marriage. I'm fine with gay rights. It's all good. You know, leave everybody alone.
Well, I mean, you know, look what happened to Rick Cizik. You know, I mean, here's a good man who's, you know, really the head lobbyist for the National Association of Evangelicals for years. And basically, I think on Terry Gross said, you know, gay marriage is
civil unions.
You know, he didn't.
No, it wasn't even gay marriage. It was civil unions, right?
So I don't remember, but it was, I think, in 2008, and he got kicked out. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I think it's really funny. And it may be generational. I mean, I think it's probably going to be at least 20 years before, you know, people who want to be powerful in the evangelical world, aside from, you know, it's really fascinating. I mean, you know, I was kind of skeptical of Shane Claiborne before I ever saw him. And then I heard him speak, and, you know, I think he does really interesting work in general, but, you know, he just, at this conference that I was at, he just was, you know, I love Jesus. And, you know, he was like, yeah. And then he just talked about this friend of his who was gay and who told him, you know, I tried to kill myself. He said, Jesus, what have I been doing to this guy? And he used basically most of his time to talk about why Christians cannot attack gay people and cannot be, you know, have to embrace them as brothers and sisters. And I thought, you know, here's someone who has a lot of cred in the evangelical community and who just, you know, is actually using a lot of it in changing minds around gay issues. And I think, and I tell you, I've been to, you know, he goes in on the evangelical youth circuit. They really love him. And I think he speaks about it a lot. So I think that minds are being changed. I just don't think people are going to have continence it much longer. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. I think, so I'm saying 20 years.
Okay.
What do you think?
I think that there will always be a contingent of diehards. And the question to me will be, how is that going to break out exactly? I mean, will they be able to retain control of institutions? So if you look at an institution like Southern, you know, will, I think that either it will, I can't imagine them relinquishing the control of the, you know, the orthodox position on this, or what they consider to be the orthodox position on this. Mm. So the question is, will an institution like that be able to survive? Will they be able to draw enough students, supporters, and so forth, so that they won't completely go under because of their commitment to this idea of you know, traditional, what they call traditional marriage, or, you know, God-given sexual roles, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So I really think that it's going to involve much more of a realignment of power centers, more than it is just a shift to people starting to talk like Shane Claiborne talks, or to talk like Jeff Hood talks, who was a Southern Baptist who I interviewed recently,
right.
In my headline, I called him a renegade Southern Baptist who supports LGBT equality, and then somebody tweeted at me, I think you meant heretic instead of renegade.
Right, that's renegade or heretic. Can you write your headline?
So I think that it will involve a sort of slower process. Yes, in 20 years there'll be plenty of people like Claiborne doing the circuit and talking about this, but there's still going to be a resistance and a digging of heels in, and then a realignment of where the power centers are.
Yeah, no, I think that sounds right. That sounds right to me. But you know, in 20 years we'll. We can do blogging heads again.
Right. Okay. It's a date. All right. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Yeah. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Same. Bye.
Bye.